3. It was 7 o'clock in the evening. Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch was sitting alone in his study, the room he had been fond of in old days. It was lofty, carpeted with rugs, and contained somewhat heavy, old-fashioned furniture. He was sitting on the sofa in the corner, dressed as though to go out, though he did not seem to be intending to do so. On the table before him stood a lamp with a shade. The sides and corners of the big room were left in shadow. His eyes looked dreamy and concentrated, not altogether tranquil. His face looked tired and had grown a little thinner. He really was ill with a swollen face, but the story of a tooth having been knocked out was an exaggeration. One had been loosened, but it had grown into its place again. He had had a cut on the inner side of the upper lip, but that too had healed. The swelling on his face had lasted all the week, simply because the invalid would not have a doctor, and instead of having the swelling lanced, had waited for it to go down. He would not hear of a doctor, and would scarcely allow even his mother to come near him, and then only for a moment, once a day, and only at dusk, after it was dark, and before lights had been brought in. He did not receive Pyotr Stepanovitch either, though the latter ran round to Varvara Petrovna's 2 or 3 times a day so long as he remained in the town. And now, at last, returning on the Monday morning after his 3 days' absence, Pyotr Stepanovitch made a circuit of the town, and, after dining at Yulia Mikhailovna's, came at last in the evening to Varvara Petrovna, who was impatiently expecting him. The interdict had been removed. Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch was at home. Varvara Petrovna herself led the visitor to the door of the study. She had long looked forward to their meeting, and Pyotr Stepanovitch had promised to run to her and repeat what passed. She knocked timidly at Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch's door, and, getting no answer, ventured to open the door a couple of inches. "Nicholas, may I bring Pyotr Stepanovitch in to see you?" she asked, in a soft and restrained voice, trying to make out her son's face behind the lamp. You can, of course you can," Pyotr Stepanovitch himself cried out loudly and gaily. He opened the door with his hand and went in. Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch had not heard the knock at the door, and only caught his mother's timid question, and had not had time to answer it. Before him, at that moment, there lay a letter he had just read over, which he was pondering deeply. He started, hearing Pyotr Stepanovitch's sudden outburst, and hurriedly put the letter under a paperweight, but did not quite succeed. A corner of the letter and almost the whole envelope showed. "I called out on purpose that you might be prepared," Pyotr Stepanovitch said hurriedly, with surprising naivete, running up to the table and instantly staring at the corner of the letter, which peeped out from beneath the paperweight. "And no doubt you had time to see how I hid the letter I had just received under the paperweight," said Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch calmly, without moving from his place. "A letter? Bless you and your letters! What are they to do with me?" cried the visitor. "But what does matter?" he whispered again, turning to the door, which was by now closed, and nodding his head in that direction. "She never listens," Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch observed coldly. "What if she did overhear?" cried Pyotr Stepanovitch, raising his voice cheerfully and settling down in an armchair. "I've nothing against that. Only I've come here now to speak to you alone. Well, at last I've succeeded in getting at you. First of all, how are you? I see you're getting on splendidly. Tomorrow you'll show yourself again, eh?" "Perhaps. Set their minds at rest. Set mine at rest at last," he gesticulated violently with a jocose and amiable air. "If only you knew what nonsense I've had to talk to them. You know, though," he laughed. "I don't know everything. I've only heard from my mother that you've been very active." "Oh, well, I've said nothing definite," Pyotr Stepanovitch flared up at once, as though defending himself from an awful attack. "I simply trotted out Shatov's wife, you know, that is, the rumours of your liaison in Paris, which accounted, of course, for what happened on Sunday. You're not angry?" I'm sure you've done your best.
Oh, that's just what I was afraid of. Though what does that mean, done your best? That's a reproach, isn't it? You always go straight for things, though. What I was most afraid of as I came here was that you wouldn't go straight for the point.
I don't want to go straight for anything, said Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch with some irritation, but he laughed at once.
I didn't mean that. I didn't mean that. Don't make a mistake, cried Pyotr Stepanovitch, waving his hands, rattling his words out like peas, and at once relieved at his companion's irritability. I'm not going to worry you with our business, especially in your present position. I've only come about Sunday's affair, and only to arrange the most necessary steps, because, you see, it's impossible. I've come with the frankest explanations, which I stand in more need of than you. So much for your vanity. But at the same time, it's true. I've come to be open with you from this time forward.
Then you have not been open with me before.
You know that yourself. I've been cunning with you many times. You smile. I'm very glad of that smile as a prelude to our explanation. I provoked that smile on purpose by using the word cunning, so that you might get cross directly at my daring to think I could be cunning, so that I might have a chance of explaining myself at once. You see? You see how open I have become now? Well, do you care to listen? In the expression of Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch's face, which was contemptuously composed and even ironical, in spite of his visitor's obvious desire to irritate him by the insolence of his premeditated and intentionally coarse naivetés, there was, at last, a look of rather uneasy curiosity. Listen, said Pyotr Stepanovitch, wriggling more than ever. When I set off to come here, I mean here in the large sense, to this town 10 days ago, I made up my mind, of course, to assume a character. It would have been best to have done without anything, to have kept one's own character, wouldn't it? There is no better dodge than one's own character, because no one believes in it. I meant, I must own, to assume the part of a fool, because it is easier to be a fool than to act one's own character. But as a fool is, after all, something extreme, and anything extreme excites curiosity, I ended by sticking to my own character. And what is my own character? The golden mean, neither wise nor foolish, rather stupid and dropped from the moon, as sensible people say here. Isn't that it?
Perhaps it is, said Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch with a faint smile.
Ah, you agree. I'm very glad. I knew beforehand that it was your own opinion. You needn't trouble, I am not annoyed, and I didn't describe myself in that way to get a flattering contradiction from you. No, you're not stupid, you're clever. Ah, you're smiling again. I've blundered once more. You would not have said you're clever, granted. But I'll let it pass anyway. Passons, as Papa says, and, in parenthesis, don't be vexed with my verbosity. By the way, I always say a lot, that is, use a great many words and talk very fast, and I never speak well. And why do I use so many words, and why do I never speak well? Because I don't know how to speak. People who can speak well speak briefly, so that I am stupid, am I not? But as this gift of stupidity is natural to me, why shouldn't I make skilful use of it? And I do make use of it. It's true that as I came here I did think at first of being silent, but you know silence is a great talent and therefore incongruous for me, and secondly silence would be risky anyway. So I made up my mind, finally, that it would be best to talk, but to talk stupidly, that is, to talk and talk and talk, to be in a tremendous hurry to explain things, and in the end to get muddled in my own explanations, so that my listener would walk away without hearing the end, with a shrug, or better still, with a curse. You succeed straight off in persuading them of your simplicity, in boring them, and in being incomprehensible, three advantages all at once. Do you suppose anybody will suspect you of mysterious designs after that? Why, every one of them would take it as a personal affront if anyone were to say I had secret designs. And I sometimes amuse them, too. And that's priceless. Why, they're ready to forgive me everything now, just because the clever fellow who used to publish manifestos out there turns out to be stupider than themselves. That's so, isn't it? From your smile I see you approve.
Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch was not smiling at all, however. On the contrary, he was listening with a frown and some impatience.
Eh? What? I believe you said no matter.
Pyotr Stepanovitch rattled on. Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch had said nothing at all.
Of course, I assure you I'm not here to compromise you by my company, by claiming you as my comrade. But do you know, you're horribly captious today. I ran into you with a light and open heart, and you seem to be laying up every word I say against me. I assure you I'm not going to begin about anything shocking today. I give you my word, and I agree beforehand to all your conditions. Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch was obstinately silent. Eh? What? Did you say something? I see. I see that I've made a blunder again. It seems you've not suggested conditions, and you're not going to. I believe you. I believe you. Well, you can set your mind at rest. I know, of course, that it's not worthwhile for me to suggest them, is it? I'll answer for you beforehand, and just from stupidity, of course. Stupidity again. You're laughing, eh? What? Nothing. Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch laughed at last. I just remembered that I really did call you stupid. But you weren't there then, so they must have repeated it. I would ask you to make haste and come to the point. Why, but I am at the point. I'm talking about Sunday, babbled Pyotr Stepanovitch. Why, what was I on Sunday? What would you call it? Just fussy, mediocre stupidity, and in the stupidest way I took possession of the conversation by force. But they forgave me everything. First, because I dropped from the moon. That seems to be settled here now by everyone. And secondly, because I told them a pretty little story, and got you all out of a scrape, didn't they? Didn't they? That is, you told your story so as to leave them in doubt, and suggest some compact and collusion between us, when there was no collusion, and I'd not asked you to do anything. Just so, just so. Pyotr Stepanovitch caught him up, apparently delighted. That's just what I did do, for I wanted you to see that I implied it. I exerted myself chiefly for your sake, for I caught you and wanted to compromise you. Above all, I wanted to find out how far you're afraid. It would be interesting to know why you are so open now. Don't be angry, don't be angry, don't glare at me. You're not, though. You wonder why I am so open. Why, just because it's all changed now, of course. It's over, buried under the sand. I've suddenly changed my ideas about you. The old way is closed. Now I shall never compromise you in the old way. It will be in a new way now. You've changed your tactics. There are no tactics. Now it's for you to decide in everything, that is, if you want to. Say yes, and if you want to, say no. There, you have my new tactics, and I won't say a word about our cause till you bid me yourself. You laugh? Laugh away. I'm laughing myself. But I'm in earnest now, in earnest, in earnest. Though a man who is in such a hurry is stupid, isn't he? Never mind. I may be stupid, but I'm in earnest. In earnest. He really was speaking in earnest, in quite a different tone, and with a peculiar excitement, so that Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch looked at him with curiosity. You say you've changed your ideas about me, he asked. I changed my ideas about you the moment when you drew your hands back after Shartov's attack. And that's enough. That's enough. No questions, please. I'll say nothing more now. He jumped up, waving his hands as though waving off questions. But as there were no questions, and he had no reason to go away, he sank into an armchair again, somewhat reassured. By the way, in parenthesis, he rattled on at once, some people here are babbling that you'll kill him, and taking bets about it, so that Lempke positively thought of setting the police on, but Yulia Mikhailovna forbade it. But enough about that, quite enough. I only spoke of it to let you know. By the way, I moved the Lebyadkins the same day, you know. Did you get my note with their address? I received it at the time. I didn't do that by way of stupidity. I did it genuinely, to serve you. If it was stupid anyway, it was done in good faith. Oh, all right. Perhaps it was necessary, said Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch dreamily. Only don't write any more letters to me, I beg you. Impossible to avoid it. It was only one. So Liputin knows. Impossible to help it. But Liputin, you know yourself, dare not. By the way, you ought to meet our fellows. That is, the fellows, not our fellows. Or you'll be finding fault again. Don't disturb yourself. Not just now, but sometime. Just now it's raining. I'll let them know they'll meet together, and we'll go in the evening. They're waiting, with their mouths open like young crows in a nest, to see what present we've brought them. They're a hot-headed lot. They've brought out leaflets. They're on the point of quarrelling. Virginsky is a universal humanity man. Liputin is a Fourierist with a marked inclination for police work, a man, I assure you, who is precious from one point of view, though he requires strict supervision in all others. And last of all, that fellow with the long ears. He'll read an account of his own system. And do you know, they're offended at my treating them casually and throwing cold water over them. But we certainly must meet.
You've made me out some sort of chief, Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch dropped as carelessly as possible.
Pyotr Stepanovitch looked quickly at him. By the way, he interposed, in haste to change the subject, as though he had not heard. I've been here two or three times, you know, to see Her Excellency, Varvara Petrovna, and I have been obliged to say a great deal, too.
So I imagine.
No, don't imagine. I've simply told her that you won't kill him. Well, and other sweet things. And only fancy, the very next day she knew I'd moved Maria Timofeyevna beyond the river. Was it you told her?
I never dreamed of it.
I knew it wasn't you. Who else could it be? It's interesting.
Liputin, of course.
No, not Liputin, muttered Pyotr Stepanovitch, frowning. I'll find out who. It's more like Shatov. That's nonsense, though. Let's leave that, though it's awfully important. By the way, I kept expecting that your mother would suddenly burst out with the great question. Ah, yes, she was horribly glum at first, but suddenly, when I came today, she was beaming all over. What does that mean?
It's because I promised her today that within 5 days I'll be engaged to Lizaveta Nikolaevna, Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch said with surprising openness.
Oh, yes, of course, faltered Pyotr Stepanovitch, seeming disconcerted. There are rumours of her engagement, you know. It's true, too. But you're right. She'd run from under the wedding crown. You've only to call her. You're not angry at my saying so.
No, I'm not angry.
I notice it's awfully hard to make you angry today, and I begin to be afraid of you. I'm awfully curious to know how you'll appear tomorrow. I expect you've got a lot of things ready. You're not angry at my saying so.
Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch made no answer at all, which completed Pyotr Stepanovitch's irritation.
By the way, did you say that in earnest to your mother about Lizaveta Nikolaevna? He asked.
Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch looked coldly at him.
Oh, I understand. It was only to soothe her, of course.
And if it were in earnest? Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch asked firmly.
Oh, God bless you, then, as they say in such cases. It won't hinder the cause. You see, I don't say our. You don't like the word our. And I'm at your service, as you know.
You think so?
I think nothing, nothing, Pyotr Stepanovitch hurriedly declared, laughing, because I know you consider what you're about beforehand for yourself, and everything with you has been thought out. I only mean that I am seriously at your service, always and everywhere, and in every sort of circumstance, every sort, really. Do you understand that?
Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch yawned.
I've bored you, Pyotr Stepanovitch cried, jumping up suddenly and snatching his perfectly new round hat as though he were going away. He remained and went on talking, however, though he stood up, sometimes pacing about the room and tapping himself on the knee with his hat at exciting parts of the conversation. I meant to amuse you with stories of the Lempkas, too, he cried gaily.
Afterwards, perhaps, not now. But how is Yulia Mikhailovna?
What conventional manners all of you have.
Her health is no more to you than the health of the grey cat, yet you ask after it.
I approve of that. She's quite well, and her respect for you amounts to a superstition. Her immense anticipations of you amount to a superstition. She does not say a word about what happened on Sunday, and is convinced that you will overcome everything yourself by merely making your appearance. Upon my word, she fancies you can do anything. You're an enigmatic and romantic figure now more than ever you were. Extremely advantageous position. It is incredible how eager everyone is to see you. They were pretty hot when I went away, but now it is more so than ever. Thanks again for your letter. They are all afraid of Count K. Do you know they look upon you as a spy?
I keep that up. You're not angry.
It does not matter. It does not matter. It's essential in the long run. They have their ways of doing things here. I encourage it, of course. Yulia Mikhailovna in the first place. Gaganov, too. You laugh. But you know I have my policy. I babble away, and suddenly I say something clever, just as they are on the lookout for it. They crowd round me, and I humbug away again. They've all given me up in despair by now. He's got brains, but he's dropped from the moon. Lempke invites me to enter the service, so that I may be reformed. You know I treat him mockingly. That is, I compromise him, and he simply stares. Yulia Mikhailovna encourages it. Oh, by the way, Gaganov is in an awful rage with you. He said the nastiest things about you yesterday at Duhova. I told him the whole truth on the spot. That is, of course, not the whole truth. I spent the whole day at Duhova. It's a splendid estate, a fine house. Then is he at Duhova now? Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch broke in suddenly, making a sudden start forward and almost leaping up from his seat. No, he drove me here this morning. We returned together, said Pyotr Stepanovitch, appearing not to notice Stavrogin's momentary excitement. What's this? I dropped a book. He bent down to pick up the keepsake he had knocked down, The Women of Balzac, with illustrations. He opened it suddenly. I haven't read it. Lempke writes novels, too. Yes? Queried Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, as though beginning to be interested. In Russian, on the sly, of course. Yulia Mikhailovna knows and allows it. He's henpecked, but with good manners. It's their system. Such strict form. Such self-restraint. Something of the sort would be the thing for us. You approve of government methods? I should rather think so. It's the one thing that's natural and practicable in Russia. I won't, he cried out suddenly. I'm not referring to that. Not a word on delicate subjects. Goodbye. Though you look rather green. I'm feverish. I can well believe it. You should go to bed. By the way, there are Skoptsi here in the neighbourhood. They're curious people. Of that later, though. Ah, here's another anecdote. There's an infantry regiment here in the district. I was drinking last Friday evening with the officers. We've three friends among them. Vous comprenez? They were discussing atheism, and I need hardly say they made short work of God. They were squealing with delight. By the way, Shatov declares that if there's going to be a rising in Russia, we must begin with atheism. Maybe it's true. One grizzled old stager of a captain sat mum, not saying a word. All at once he stands up in the middle of the room and says aloud, as though speaking to himself, "If there's no God, how can I be a captain, then?" He took up his cap and went out, flinging up his hands. "He expressed a rather sensible idea," said Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, yawning for the third time. "Yes? I didn't understand it. I meant to ask you about it." "Well, what else have I to tell you? The Shpigulin factory is interesting. As you know, there are 500 workmen in it. It's a hotbed of cholera. It's not been cleaned for 15 years, and the factory hands are swindled. The owners are millionaires. I assure you that some among the hands have an idea of the Internationale. What, you smile? You'll see. Only give me ever so little time. I've asked you to fix the time already, and now I ask you again, and then... But I beg your pardon. I won't speak of that. Don't frown. There." He turned back suddenly. "I quite forgot the chief thing. I was told just now that our box had come from Petersburg." "You mean..." Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch looked at him, not understanding. "Your box, your things, coats, trousers and linen have come. Is it true?" "Yes, they said something about it this morning." "Ah, then can't I open it at once?" "Ask Alexei." "Well, tomorrow, then. Will tomorrow do? You see, my new jacket, dress coat, and three pairs of trousers are with your things from Sharma's by your recommendation, you remember?" "I hear you're going in for being a gentleman here," said Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch with a smile. "Is it true you're going to take lessons at the riding school?" Pyotr Stepanovitch smiled a wry smile. "I say," he said suddenly, with excessive haste, in a voice that quivered and faltered. "I say, Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, let's drop personalities once and for all. Of course, you can despise me as much as you like if it amuses you, but we'd better dispense with personalities for a time, hadn't we?" "All right," Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch assented. Pyotr Stepanovitch grinned, tapped his knee with his hat, shifted from one leg to the other, and recovered his former expression. "Some people here positively look upon me as your rival with Lizaveta Nikolaevna, so I must think of my appearance, mustn't I?" he laughed. "Who told you it was that, though? It's just 8 o'clock. Well, I must be off. I promised to look in on Varvara Petrovna, but I shall make my escape. And you go to bed, and you'll be stronger tomorrow. It's raining and dark, but I've a cab. It's not over safe in the streets here at night. Ah, by the way, there's a runaway convict from Siberia, Fedka, wandering about the town and the neighbourhood. Only fancy, he used to be a serf of mine, and my papa sent him for a soldier 15 years ago and took the money for him. He's a very remarkable person.
You have been talking to him? Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch scanned him.
I have. He lets me know where he is. He's ready for anything. Anything for money, of course. But he has convictions, too, of a sort, of course. Oh, yes, by the way, again, if you meant anything of that plan you remember about Lizaveta Nikolaevna, I tell you once again, I too am a fellow ready for anything of any kind you like, and absolutely at your service. Hello? Are you reaching for your stick? Oh, no. Only fancy. I thought you were looking for your stick. Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch was looking for nothing, and said nothing. But he had risen to his feet very suddenly, with a strange look in his face. "If you want any help about Mr. Gaganov, either," Pyotr Stepanovitch blurted out suddenly, this time looking straight at the paperweight. "Of course I can arrange it all, and I'm certain you won't be able to manage without me." He went out suddenly, without waiting for an answer, but thrust his head in at the door once more. "I mention that," he gabbled hurriedly, "because Shatov had no right either, you know, to risk his life last Sunday when he attacked you, had he? I should be glad if you would make a note of that." He disappeared again, without waiting for an answer.